I'd like to start off by thanking our sponsor for financing the parts for this Frankenstein monster, along with my partner, who's a bro of few words. We did this research for Two Nerds and Two Birds. Keanu, do a show, same time, watch it. And guaranteed to give them more than just hot spit. MC extraordinaire, technique sort of rare. Quarter glare, sort of scared. Next week, more to share. From the most retardedest artists this year and forever. Villain them, you mean big brothers love ya. Definitely felonies telling me. Treacherously MC yelling, be set him free. Let me see, that strategy's misleading. G's all in the freezer with the batteries and Z-rims. Hear him stalk the concrete with bunion. It won't hurt corns when it's on like the stun gun. Not so shocking for an in-face rapper's eat rocks over beatboxing. Debunk punks with a stock flow and make it funky fresh with no socks. Oaxaco, mad villain been as high as Catman do. Tilted to the side like that fat man's shoe. Look, not to give a mixed signal, the rap game got more toys than Kris Kringle. And he's fake, your ears is not deceiving. I can't believe my eyeballs no more than Steven.
I don't even know, man.
You're,
so it's been so long.
You know what to do anymore, right?
It's been so long.
It's been
man.
Like, what, 2 months or something?
No, longer than that. I think it's like four.
I think we stopped off in about July, right?
Right when the school year started.
School year started and...
Got a little busy with stuff. I know everyone's busy, but at school and a little bit of coaching here and there.
For both?
Well, I got my soccer team, yeah. And then I was helping out the girls' basketball team.
Yeah, so I got two teams I got to coach, and I survived the whole team mom trying to get rid of me and stuff, because I was too hard on the kids, you know, stuff, garbage like that and stuff and everything, but we got through that, you know, and whatever it is. And I know I had to kind of adjust to my job waking up at 5 o'clock every morning and stuff and everything, but things are going good.
Good, right?
Oh, yeah, it's always been good, but... you know, I know you kind of had to do a little bit of refocusing on your end, and
yeah.
You know, so we're all good with that, and you know, ready to roll. I think it kind of really correlated with you know, CM Punk leaving, Daniel Bryan getting hurt, and then Roman Reigns getting hurt too. To be honest, like, it takes me about 3-4 days to watch wrestling. Like, it takes me about 4 days to watch Raw, just because there's other things I want to watch or. Other things I want to read, but with all that being said, actually, I watched Monday's offering, and you know, it's funny. Like there was a really low point in wrestling where I just really didn't care.
Talking about recently, or like
I'd say probably like up to like maybe a month or a half or 2 months ago, I just really didn't care about the product. But I was always just kind of there. I think the WWE Network really kind of. Has kept me in wrestling, just yeah. Watching all the old stuff and watching. I mean, the shows they have on there are really good, so it's kind of nice to watch all that stuff again. I like the Monday Night Wars. I like the rivalry, and then I like the Usos kind of debuted the when they were young.
Yeah, I saw the promo for that. I didn't watch it yet, but it looked pretty interesting.
Yeah,
that's kind of cool.
And then you bring back a guy like, you know, I mean, Ryback coming back. I mean, it's not like I'm jumping up and down, but it's fresh, you know, for the most part. But at least there's like new people kind of in there, you know, where it's not just John Cena the whole time, or I don't know. I was very close to coming over your place to watch Survivor Series.
You
didn't
have to work?
I didn't have to work. I was doing pretty good, so I didn't trust myself to make the drive over there.
Right.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah, it was actually pretty good. I mean, I thought the main event was done pretty well. I was feeling Ziggler was going to be the sole survivor the last couple of weeks. He's actually gotten a really good build over the last, like, that was a really good Intercontinental title run. And even though he lost it, you know, he looked strong doing it. They booked him really strong for these last couple of months, and then they kind of were dropping hints the last couple of weeks, like, about his record in Survivor Series. So I kind of had a little feeling going in, and it came to fruition. But I thought it was played pretty well. They didn't, you know, even though Ryback is kind of, you know, getting probably the best push he's gotten, because, I mean, he got a stronger push earlier, but he wasn't ready for it. I think the amount that they're giving him right now is reasonable. But the way they eliminated him kind of early, I thought, you know, I thought it worked for the match. You know, I knew Rusev was going to count out because I knew, like, they weren't going to let him get pinned or submit. And then, I don't know, it played out really well, which I thought was interesting because, you know, I kind of liked the build for the most part to it. But it's like you're looking at a match, Survivor Series, you got 10 guys in there, and only really 3 guys in that match could actually work. So I had a little bit of concerns, like what it was going to be.
Who are your 3 that can work?
Ziggler, Rollins, and...
Harper?
And Harper. Rusev, for his part, can work pretty well. You know, so maybe I'll say 4. But all the other guys were...
So Cena's out of that equation, you don't think Cena... I mean, Cena can work, but you don't think he... You know, when you compare those 3 guys, that he's the same level of worker?
He's not in the same level of work as those 3. You know, maybe, you know, experience-wise, I guess I give him the nod over Rusev right now. But I think Rusev has a ton more to offer in terms of, like, in-ring work. He's going to always be limited for, you know, because he's not going to be able to cut a ton of promos or anything. And then after that, I mean, I like watching Mark Henry, you know, in his spot. But, you know, when, like, 6 of these guys are just, like, behemoths, you know, it didn't seem balanced correctly to me.
Well, it was a crazy dynamic because you're looking Monday before Survivor Series and you're looking at all the people in the ring. And I'm looking at all these guys, like, all these guys are, like, pretty much giants. I mean, it's, like, it's kind of funny, like, when you put the Big Show in there, you put these other big guys in there, it's like he kind of dwarfs everybody. But I'm sitting there and I'm watching Rowan. I'm like, Rowan's not that smaller than Show is.
Right.
And so it was just, it was kind of, I think there could have been a lot more. I mean, I always think, like, if you have kind of, I mean, because I remember growing up and then, like, you know, having, like, Big John Studd versus Andre the Giant. I mean, that always appealed to me. Even though I never saw a match, I don't think I've ever seen Big John Studd wrestle a full match. Mm-hmm. It's kind of something like as you were a kid, you know, these names stick out to you. Like, you always hear about Big John Studd, you know who exactly he is. And, of course, like, Andre the Giant. I think you're born knowing who Andre the Giant is. But I thought, you know, and I didn't see the match, but, I mean, like, I'm kind of looking, I'm like, well, it can work, you know. But then I'm kind of reading The Masked Man, his preview and stuff and everything, and just kind of how he breaks it all down very well. And once I kind of read that and I started thinking about it, it's like it's basically like it's a Survivor Series all about angles. You know, like Rusev couldn't look weak. You know, Henry can't look weak. Rowan and Harper, they're gonna cross each other out. And then you have, you know, Seth. You know, Seth kind of has to. You know, Seth is like is like, yeah, but he's like the true jobber in there. Mm-hmm. But you still, you know what I'm saying. And the only thing that really surprised me was that, you know, like, I'm not as big of a Ziggler fan as you are. I mean, I'm a Ziggler fan, but I'm not a storied Ziggler fan like you are. Like, I didn't start from the beginning with this guy, so I haven't kept a really, you know, I don't know his history. But it kind of surprised me. I mean, it surprised me, but it didn't surprise me. And there's a couple things that's going on in the WWE right now that really kind of gives me hope, and that's why I'm kind of starting to watch a little bit more. One of them is Ziggler, and there's kind of another thing that's going on with there, too, which is making me watch, but... to kind of slow you down in terms of what you want to talk about in terms of that main event, Luke Harper being Intercontinental Champion with the way that belt is, are you okay with him being the Intercontinental Champion?
I am.
And does he fit the mold of an Intercontinental Champion?
He doesn't fit the traditional mold of an Intercontinental Champion, like, look-wise, but in terms of what we've always kind of said on this show, your Intercontinental Champion is, like, one of your guys that is your best worker. And he, like, I don't think he gets credit for being as good of a worker as he is because he's so big and because of what his gimmick is. I mean, like, you kind of pigeonhole him to being kind of, like, just kind of this not really thinking kind of brutal kind of, like, backwoods hillbilly. But, like, his psychology is good, and in the ring, the guy's really good. So I do think he kind of, in a strange way, he fits the mold of what the Intercontinental Champion should be. So, promo-wise, I don't know where that's going to go. Like, he's done well in his promos playing off of Bray. I don't know if he's going to be able to cut promos on his own, but I'm willing to see because I know whatever matches they put him in, it's going to be good.
Yeah, I think he's always been one of our favorites. I mean, especially, like, if he can shine while you're paired up with Bray Wyatt and while you're going against the Shield and you can still, like, make a name for yourself, I really think that shows off what type of performer you are. I haven't really been keeping up that much, though, in terms of WWE. And but the one thing I do know is that I don't know what's... Well, the one thing I do know is that I don't know what's going on with the Wyatt family. I mean, are they done? What's going on with them?
Yeah, I mean, there was no official breaking up, but, yeah, they kind of went through a series of vignettes where Bray was kind of saying he was going to just kind of let them be free and go on their own. And so they were kind of off TV for a while.
Yeah.
Then they had that build up with them, and then they just kind of came back. So
do you like it or not?
Not really, because I mean, I don't know that there's any long term plan for Rowan. Not that I'm some big Rowan mark, but like I thought those guys would have been better served kind of keeping the tag team division afloat, and it's not going to be as bad as what they did with Primetime Players, but I could see it kind of being the same type of thing where they don't really have any long-term plan. Like, so Harper getting that Intercontinental belt kind of makes it feel better for the time being, because at least you know, like, he's got some kind of direction. But like, I don't know where Rowan's going to go. And Bray, I don't know I really have no idea what they're going to do with Bray. I mean, you would think that they would start kind of building that guy towards being, like, you know, maybe the top heel or one of the top heels there. It seems like they're still going to have him in mid-card feuds. Now, very good mid-card feuds, mind you, but it, I don't know. It just doesn't – I don't know what the direction of where Bray's going is.
So did Bray and Ambrose, did they have any chance, or did they steal the show, you think? Or, I mean, how was that match in terms of what it was? See, because what I'm worried about is it's like – and what I'm kind of seeing, and we've seen it by a plenty of wrestlers before, is that – You start having guys that are starting to get really on with the fans, and the WWE doesn't want these guys to take over in terms of popularity. So they'll pit them against a good worker like a Bray Wyatt, Dean Ambrose, and Bray Wyatt. I think Dean Ambrose can get the job done way better than Bray Wyatt can. I mean, I'm not totally sold on Bray. I mean, I love his character, but I like having the whole kind of entourage that he has and the whole. Stigma that he has with him, and I think when you start taking those elements away, it's not the same. I mean, I think Bray's a great in-ring worker. I still think his promos are great, but it's really nice having those two guys behind him to kind of help him out. But it seems that, you know, Ambrose is really taken off. Bray was taken off, you know, was taken off in the beginning. And it's like, well, let's put these. We know that both these guys can be good workers together. Let's just put them off on the side to make it seem like they're relevant, but they're not going to be in the main event picture.
Right. Well, and so. I think what I'd say is, like, and this is going to go back a little bit to where we kind of stopped, but I was kind of with you, like, when we kind of stopped doing the podcast, there was about a good month and a half where I didn't care at all. I was really not caring. And it wasn't as much because Reigns got hurt, which was disappointing, because immediately they brought Dean Ambrose in. And the thing was, it's like a feeling that they didn't necessarily want to push Dean Ambrose at that point in time, but they really didn't have anybody else that they could push. And so then they started putting him in the angles with Rollins and the stuff with Wyatt and just all the matches that he was in. And I think they couldn't help but have that guy get over, or, like, you know, actually push the guy to get over, because he had to fill the void that Rollins was leaving. And I thought he took advantage more than almost anybody has with, like, given, like, you know, whatever spot that he was given, and pretty much the ceiling being in there. It's like, you know, you can get as over as you want to be with him, but you're not going to be a champion right now. And I think he's really taken advantage of that. So I don't know if he's going forward, and I don't know if Bray's going forward either, right? Like, well, the matches are good.
Yeah, but do you want, I mean, so here's the thing, is like, because, you know, we can, and I'm not saying that you're complaining, but the one thing that we've always talked about in these 85 podcasts we've done earlier is, like, you know, give us content, you know, besides just, like, say, Cena with the title picture, or give us another story elements here and there. And we're kind of getting that, you know, and I think there's three or four storylines that I'm kind of, they're just like kind of a nice kind of, you know, thing that's going on. And then you kind of have the whole thing with Kofi Kingston and
the New Day
and stuff with the two other guys and everything. So there's little things here and there that's kind of like, okay, you know, let's see what happens here. But we always said, like, well, give us diverse storylines. So, and the problem is like, so you have two really good workers in Ambrose and Bray, and we should be eating it up, but we're not, you know. And at least I'm not. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, you're looking at Survivor Series and you're looking at all these matches, and it's like, well, you know, nothing. The only reason why I think I would, you know, I'm interested in this is because first of all, it's like, it's funny because I was like, well, maybe CM Punk will come back. You know, they need someone to kind of come in, and I forgot about Sting, and I heard that Sting was going to make an appearance. So I was like, okay. You know, so it was like a pipe dream that the pipe bomb would come back. You know, and I looked it up online and just to see where he was at and stuff and everything. But then it's just kind of the whole thing was like, okay, well, the Authority, you know, like, you know, the, like, sitting there, what, you know, looking at the buildup for the pay-per-view, I know the Authority is going to lose. And it's like, well, do I really want to see that, and this? But there really wasn't, like, a lot of matches where I was just kind of like, well, I really need to see that match. And even, like, I think WWE itself really didn't want to see some of the matches, especially what they did with AJ Lee and stuff and everything, with that whole thing. So, I mean, are we just, like, being kind of like the typical, like, Mark, you know, like, heel type fan where we're never happy with the product? Or, I mean, because I'm trying to like these two guys. I do like these two guys, but it's just, I'm not interested. Maybe I'm too impatient because I'm just tired of the same song and dance.
I'm fine with it. I think it's good. I'd rather have those guys going against each other than putting Bray against John Cena where I know he's just going to get buried. I think the biggest complaint that I had about it, and it's got nothing to do with the two of them, but and this is kind of where I was going to. But so when that month I stopped to watch wrestling, the thing that got me into it was like the 2 weeks right before Hell in a Cell were really, really good. And then Hell in a Cell was a pretty good match. And then the 2 weeks after were really good. That got me kind of back on board with what was happening. But
what was it that you're saying was really good? Was it the cinder block thing? Or what was it?
Well, so that was about when they brought that wasn't the cinder block. That was when Ambrose came back. So okay. It coincided a lot with Ambrose coming back. But just the matches with him and Rollins are great. And then that was also with the time where you started seeing some momentum with Dolph, and he was being put in some pretty good matches and made to look pretty good. I guess, like I'm saying, my bigger problem with the Wyatt and Ambrose thing isn't anything to do with them as much as I don't think they really resolved. And I think they did it on purpose, but they didn't resolve. I didn't like the way that they concluded Rollins and Ambrose. Like, I thought the match was really good. The high spots in that were pretty damn crazy, but like
you just can't forget like all this kind of beef that these two guys are supposed to have against each other, right?
That and like the whole Wyatt showing up in the cage thing, I didn't really buy, and like with all this focus that Ambrose had on Rollins, I mean he had him beat, and it's like I'm getting to this point with wrestling, and it's stuff that I've thought about, and I mean, we talked about some of these things is like bad spots in wrestling, but it's like, you know, these guys are supposed to be like pros and the best of the best and focus on what they're doing. I know Ambrose is supposed to be unstable, but he had like the single-minded focus of taking out Seth Rollins, and then right when he has him, he just kind of stands there doing nothing for like forever, so Wyatt can get him. And then even still, Wyatt hits him with like the Uranagi, which is a good move, but it's not a finisher for Bray Wyatt by any means. He's never got a pin out of that match. And then you wait like 5 minutes for Rollins to crawl over and he gets the win on Ambrose. It's just very unsatisfying to me, which is fine. I mean, if I'm them and I'm being smart, I would slow play that rivalry out until Rollins cashes in, and then you can have Ambrose versus Rollins for a title, you know, and rekindle that. I get that. But I just didn't like the way they transitioned from what I thought was one of the better feuds in recent memory just to go into Wyatt, and it didn't make any sense why.
But aren't you prepared for that, though? I mean, aren't you, like, I mean, it's nice for you to, I mean, it's nice to say, like, you know, when Rollins gets the belt and then him and Ambrose will have a feud or whatever, it's like, yeah, but there's no way right now that you can have those two guys in any type of main event, you know, let alone one of them. But they have both those guys going after the belt. You know, it's like the WWE, they're not wired that way.
Well, they main evented that Hell in a Cell.
Yeah.
They legit main evented it, and that was the best match of the night. It's like, it was definitely, you know, the Cena and Orton Cell match was fine. It got the job done, but it was nowhere near what Rollins and Ambrose was. And the thing that I liked about it is they actually let Ambrose and Rollins go on as the last match, a legitimate main event. So, I mean, there's small steps. But, yeah, I mean, like, I'm not disappointed in it because I do see, like, a long-term vision potentially on why they did what they did. And I'm not disappointed in Wyatt Ambrose per se. Just a part of me felt like they just switched gears really abruptly and They've done worse things, put it that way. But that's the only really holdup I have.
Well, and I think they're also expecting big things with Wyatt and Ambrose for table ladders and chairs. I mean, I think here's a pay-per-view that kind of, without really any type of strong main eventers, because as much as they live and die by Cena, there isn't any strong main eventers. I mean, they don't have the undercard to support a Cena main event. And I think you kind of see that a little bit with Hell in a Cell in terms of putting those guys on at the end. What I mean by that is that I think there's plenty of main eventers on the roster, but they're not main eventers that WWE is prepared to put them as a main event.
Right.
And I really kind of see this, you know, this pay-per-view, they're looking, okay, like, well, who's going to, you know, who's going to do this, who's going to do that? And I really think they're going to hang their hat on Ambrose and Wyatt to really take care of that show.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at WWE cyclically, like, they really shut down and taper down after Survivor Series, like, till the end of the year, right? Usually nothing good, nothing interesting happens in December. And then January, they start, like winding up the gears again to get ready for Rumble. But I think generally I've seen that as a bad thing, and I think it has been just the way things have been set up in the past. But I think actually that could be a really good thing for like fans like us, so to speak, in that since they are kind of shutting down with some of those bigger name guys, like some of the guys that we're more interested in seeing, I think this is a pay-per-view that they're probably going to try to lean on them a little bit. So I think, in that sense, maybe it was better to slow play Ambrose and Wyatt and make the focus not on them for Survivor Series, but if it's part of a greater build, because that is the match to close out the year in the pay-per-view in December, then you know, I have no problem with that. I have no doubt those guys are capable of putting on great matches.
Oh, yeah. And, we since we started this podcast, what, maybe 3 years ago? We're always pointing to young talent, and these guys are finally, this young talent's finally starting to kind of take big leaps where it's not the same old people anymore. It's not the same old guys. They're like pretty much everybody from the start of like 3 years ago until now. The guys that are on the show are the guys that we liked 3 years ago, and they're finally getting their push. And I'm talking, you can talk about every, you know, tag team, Intercontinental, U.S. So they've made a successful transition of bringing in a lot of NXT guys. There has been some failures, but they're trying to repackage it, aka Fandango, which I'm not saying is going to work, but they're trying to do something. But that's a waste. I think Adam Rose is a huge waste, and I really kind of feel sad about that guy because he's not a young guy. I mean, the guy looks really old, you know, and I think this guy's like, this is like kind of it for this guy. And it's kind of funny, like I kind of see this guy, like I think he can be kind of, he reminds me a lot of Canyon in terms of like certain things that he does in the ring. Like, he's not as innovative as Canyon was, but there's something there, but it's just with this whole gimmick stuff, it isn't working. Mm-hmm. And when the bunny takes over and you try to figure out who the bunny is, and then what happens when the bunny shows up, you know, it's like everybody thinks this bunny's going to take off when he unmasks, but I think he's just going to get kind of lost in the wayside. So what I've kind of liked about the past couple of Raws is that they've really toned everything down. It's not, there's not 50 million different things going on. It's the same wrestlers that are showing up every week. I'm not going to talk about the same intros they have or the same, you know, the same openings they have with the Authority coming out. But if you look at the matches, it's the same type of performers. And the things that I don't like is that you might have the same performers, but you kind of have some old storylines in there, like what's her name, you know, Natalia and her husband, kind of this back and forth thing because they're trying to put the show on. But so there's things there, but the best spots I think that's been going on is you want to cut me off, so go ahead.
We're kind of getting to a point where I can ask you this because it's something I want to ask because I'm very curious your response. The new tag team champions, Miz and Mizdow, Damian Sandow, your boy. Like, so when last we were talking,
because that's where I was going
to
go.
I kind of thought it was, but I wanted to turn around and ask you the question here. So, you know,
because you're a journalist, aka Bobby Heenan.
Yeah,
right?
I'm a broadcast journalist. So, you know, he was stuck in this endless flow of like doing like impressions of other people's gimmicks and stuff. And I think maybe he just started doing the stunt double thing when we kind of like stopped doing this a couple months back. And we probably at the time just thought, oh, this is another one of several, like, you know, just bad gimmicks he's going through. But he's really like owned this thing, and it's a really interesting dynamic that he's got like a partner. He's got a tag team champion that's got a heel and a face together. And I don't know, like, you know, being a Sandow's your guy, I wanted to defer to you and see how you, if you like where it was going, or you thought this is just like another kind of like thing that's going to kill Sandow in the long run.
I hated it. I mean, I hated it. When it first came out with the whole Mizdow thing, I hated it. I could not stand it. But then, I mean, in true to form, I mean, to me, this is what shows how good of a person he is. I mean, the thing that I hated was that I just felt that this was like a death knell in him. And I felt that after all, I've seen all these guys that are talented, have better names than this guy does, has a better reputation in the business. They're getting the axe. Everybody got the axe. And I'm going like, well, I think Triple H still likes this guy. So I'm holding on to the hope of that. Over the past, I mean, to tell you the truth, like the past like 2-3 weeks, they've been the reason why I've been watching. And not just because of, you know, just because of them, but I thought Stardust and Goldust, I thought great work. Usos, great work at the same time.
Matadors,
I thought were great. I thought the Matadors for a while, I mean, they were finally making a name for themselves, and it's fun to watch them because you kind of forget how good they are. But over the past 3 weeks, I thought I bought into it. I bought into what he's doing. I thought the stuff is comical, but I mean, if anybody else is doing it, it's like stupid. You know, it's like a stupid thing. But you're right. I mean, this guy sells. He gives everything he has to his sell. And him, I think the thing that did it for me was, the Miz was double teamed and he got flipped over, and so Sandow comes in the ring and he flips himself over by himself. I mean, and that's when it turned for me. I was like, This stuff is really good. And then they do these promos and he's in the back and doing all this stuff.
Yeah, because at first it was kind of interesting how he's just like, if Miz had a guy in the side headlock and then he was on the side doing the side headlock, it's like mildly entertaining. But yeah, when he started going out of his way to like take bumps that no one was giving him, or like pantomime Miz like walking to the ring or in the promos with the hand gestures and everything, that's when I...
Well, and what I like more, you know, it's funny, it's like, I like Sandow's first incarnation, you know, as like kind of a genius type guy, better than everybody else, because I thought he was kind of great promos. But there's something to be said when, you know, it's this guy, yeah, you're right, this guy for a year has just wallowed in the mire, like, just doing stupid things after stupid things, and there's certain things that he would do, and I remember we talking about that in the podcast, going like, you know, he's just pretty much saying, how the fans think and stuff, and how, like, you know, he's the flavor of the week of in terms of like being a jobber, and how it's his job to be a jobber, and he's saying this outright and nobody's really picking up on it except for people like me and you, and of course, like, you know, a select group, a few that's seen this for a long time. But what I really liked was this Monday where you know, Lillian calls him Sandow and Miz is like, no, it's Mizdow and stuff, and then everything that he's doing like the week before, everybody wants him to be in the ring. I mean, the fans are starting to get behind him and stuff. And I think that's the only way that you can make this guy really kind of pop and see where he can lead after that. What I'm kind of worried about, so when, you know, because you're looking at this on Monday and you start seeing the tension. I mean, it's underplayed because I think the announcing team really sucks, you know, and they're talking about other shit. And, you know, and Sandow's just kind of, he's just working it, right? He's like looking at the Miz, watching what he's doing. And then he starts doing, then he kind of starts feeling that the crowd is more into him than they are with the Miz, and it's this nice slow play, and I just want to see where it goes. And I tell you the truth, like, you have Ziggler, right?
Yeah.
Well, all I have right now, really, in the WWE for myself is Sandow. I think Sandow is like my last like wrestler that I'm really kind of I want to really take off, because all my guys are gone.
Well, you know? In your defense, your boy has a belt right now, and mine doesn't.
Yeah.
So yeah, he has two.
But he's ready to Ziggler's starting to become that main event guy, which we've been waiting for.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to get my hopes up because the rug has been pulled out so many times, but this is probably the most sustained build that he's had ever. Because even with his title run, I mean, he jobbed for 8 months when he had the briefcase, and then he won it, and then, you know, obviously, you know, he got hurt with the swagger kick. So this is probably the most sustained, steady, like, upward build he's ever really had. And I think the other thing too is all the stuff that we've been talking about what the Intercontinental title should be, and the joke that it's been in the last 2-3 years, just kind of, you know, everybody that got that belt immediately went on to a losing streak, like losing streak after losing streak. And he's the first Intercontinental champion in probably 2 years that has won probably 80% of the matches he was in. And these are all the matches that typically he was losing for the last couple of years. So I think it, part of it has to do with the fact that the world and the WWE titles have been unified. So there's no more muddy waters about what's the second most prestigious belt is. It's definitely the Intercontinental Championship. And with Brock not being there, I think they kind of realized we have to make the Intercontinental Championship mean something now. And I think Dolph kind of really put a good foot forward in making that belt mean something. So even when he lost it briefly to The Miz, he won it right back. And then you're like, oh, he's going to go into this kind of losing streak again. And it didn't happen. So I mean, I think, yeah, it could be that he is being propelled to that semi-main event status right now, which I think is long overdue. But I think the best way to start that thing off with what he did was have that type of Intercontinental title run. And that's also kind of partly why I'm optimistic about Harper, too, because if that's what they're realizing now, then I'm thinking Harper's going to have a decent run with that belt.
Yeah, and I think really what kind of – because I was thinking about that, too. I was like, okay, because when he started facing Ambrose for the title, I was like, oh, man, I'm like, you know, Ambrose can probably – I mean, Ambrose deserves the Intercontinental title, too. Mm-hmm. But it kind of sucks that Harper's going to be a stopgap type champion. But then I'm going like, well, I mean, you know, Bray's out there somewhere. I mean, Bray's going to break it up or whatever it is. Yeah, you know, having Harper be the Intercontinental champion, it's something that totally, like, came out of left field for me. And the whole thing is I was watching the match on, you know, the match before. I didn't realize it was for the title. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden it's like Dolph loses the title. But I'm sort of going like, well, he's not losing anything because I think this is his next step to really kind of take off. They're kind of doing it in certain ways. Like, believe it or not, pairing him up with Cena, I think, really kind of propels him. You know, which sucks that it has to be that way. But every time that this guy was ready to kind of make a extensive singles run, he was doing it by himself, and he didn't have. I don't know if you have to pair yourself up with Cena to reach that next level. I mean, and the whole reason I say it is because the Usos really didn't become the Usos, I think, until, I mean, me and you knew about the Usos and really liked the Usos, but I don't think they got the kind of the mainstream type stamp until they started teaming up with Cena for like four-man tags and stuff, and I think that really kind of established them as a top tag team, and it's really kind of like the premier workers in the company in terms of tag team.
So do you think it's turning now that, like, because it used to be, if you got put into any kind of long-term plan with Cena, it was like it was the Hulk Hogan treatment, right? Like, you're gonna be the guy for a month or two, and then you're gonna throw him by the wayside. And that's kind of one thing I was kind of wondering about going forward. Like, I mean, like with that Survivor Series match, I mean, Eric Rowan is like the classic guy that John Cena uses up for a month, and then you never hear from again. like, do you think that they're gonna get a rub from Cena here, or do you think those guys that were in that match are like, that was a one-off, and they're all kind of done with that?
Well, Cena doesn't have that good of a track record, and the whole thing is, yeah, you're right. I mean, if you're going to compare Cena to Hulk Hogan, it really, there's a lot of similarities between these two guys, and that's even a thing I was thinking about too. It's like, okay, so if Ziggler kind of becomes Cena's friend, are they going to end up in a feud together where this, that, and this, and blah, 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 blah? I don't think they can afford it right now. You know, I really don't think that they can afford. Now, do I think a Ziggler and Cena program can be compelling? Yeah, I think it can, because I think it will really show how much Ziggler shines. And the thing is, like, we can sit here and bash Cena all we want, and I'm not a huge Cena fan, but to tell you the truth, like, you look at, like, CM Punk's, you know, work in WWE, him working with Cena was one of the, I mean, I think that's when wrestling was at its highest peak for me in terms of popularity. It felt like the old days when I was watching NWA and watching early, you know, Macho Man in WWE. It's like, yeah, these guys never ended up on top. But for like 4 or 5 months, you know, and there's even like a year or 2 year feuds and stuff, you know, it was a good culmination. And if you look back at Cena and CM Punk, I think you're going to see some really good matches. If you put all those matches together, I thought that was a really good rivalry. Do I think Ziggler can do that as well? I think he can. I just don't think he doesn't have enough pull in the back. He doesn't have enough of a pedigree in terms of belts and everything like that, of being the man for a long time, to really bring that out in Cena. But at the same time, I just don't know where it's going to go. You know, I don't know where Ziggler's going to go. I don't have high hopes for Ziggler. Can he have a great run? I hope he does, and I think he can. I think he's in a position now. If they want to give him a really good extended run, he can do it. If they want to cut him off and put him in a different direction, I think what you've seen over Ziggler over the past 3-4 years is the guy's a survivor, and his talent. You know, if you're going to turn him off and cut the legs from under him, he's going to come back into the picture because he's just too good of a worker. Now, is it what you want as a fan? I don't think so. But at the same time, I think we forget sometimes, too. It's like, I was a huge Chris Benoit fan. It took Benoit years for him to kind of be a main event guy. I was a Jericho fan before you were, but you became you became more of a Jericho fan. It took the guy a long time, too. I mean, and the two, him holding the two belts at the same time wasn't the highlight of his career. It took him a long time to really be kind of like a main event guy, to be the top heel in the business. That took 8 years for it to happen. And Ziggler, we're like in what, year 5 or 6? So I think Ziggler's one of those guys down the line, once you start having guys that either get hurt or start having other obligations, he's going to be pushing the limelight along with a Seth Rollins, hopefully along with a Dean Ambrose, hopefully along with a Roman Reigns, and then a very, very, very slim hope that hopefully along with Damian Sandow as well.
And hopefully Daniel Bryan can get healthy. And then that's not even to mention some of the new guys that have come into NXT since last time we talked. What are they calling now? Hideo Itami.
Yeah.
And
Sami Zayn.
Well, yeah, he's been there, but it's my guy, Finn Balor.
Who was?
Oh, Devitt,
okay. Does the call me off Finn Balor?
Yeah.
Because you're watching NXT, right? Because I'm not watching it
regularly. But, yeah, I became kind of, over the last year, I've been getting pretty interested in Bullet Club and Devitt specifically. And so for him to come over and Itami, who is, of course, Kenta Kobayashi, and then the signing of Kevin Steen, who goes by Kevin Owens now. I mean, those are three, like, pretty big names from Japan and the independent scene that, you know, they seem like they're going to get fast-tracked as well.
I mean, you have a guy like Kenta. I mean, you really think you need to repackage that guy and give him a new name? I mean, isn't like Kenta? I mean, Kenta's Kenta. I mean, give me a break, Dave, you know?
Yeah, I don't like it, but, I mean, it's the WWE way. I mean, it's not a logic thing. It's like a marketing and rights to what name thing, right? Because then if they start using the name Kenta, then I'm sure there's a big legal thing about who has the rights to the Kenta Library in New Japan and all that stuff. So I didn't like it, but it didn't bother me because I knew that was like one of the business side things. So it's whatever with that. I thought the Kevin Steen / Kevin Owens one was a pretty. I thought that was pretty cool. I'm going to guess he didn't read that, but basically he picked the name Owens as his last name because his favorite wrestler of all time is Owen Hart, and he actually named his son Owen. So that's kind of a homage to Owen Hart, which I thought was pretty cool for him.
I have no idea who Kevin Steen is.
He's been, I think, a Ring of Honor and Pro Wrestling Guerrilla champion, like, frequently for the last couple of years. He's big, which is, like, not like a, you know, not like a freakishly big or anything, but I think, like, my guess is, like, they're going to have some kind of, like, trio of Itami, Steen, and Devitt, which is a good compliment, because those guys are pretty small, right? Like, very skilled, but pretty small, so to have someone that could be, like, the muscle of the group to back them up, I think that could work pretty well, so I'm hopeful. And Zayn, like, the times that I have watched NXT, like, the matches he puts on are really good, and even his mic work isn't too bad either, so high hopes for that guy too.
So, what do you think about Seth Rollins' progression? You like what the direction he's going, because he's really kind of been like the top heel, even when Randy Orton was there. That they're kind of molding him into the top heel, and he really doesn't have a storyline. You know, like, he's not going against Cena, this and this. I thought, you know, the one thing about the Survivor Series that I did like in the build up about it was that there wasn't one person, right? I mean, it wasn't like, you're not looking at, like, oh, it's really between John Cena and Seth Rollins. and they didn't play it that way. And it's like every guy had kind of had a story. You know, I didn't know that Big Show walked out or whatever it was, but even that's kind of a story unto itself. Henry doing the typical Henry things. You know, I'm always for that as well. I guess the casualty of war that I didn't like was what they're doing with our boy with the Swiss compatriot over there.
Though it was hella funny when he trolled him, making it look like he was going to be the fifth guy on Cena's team. Did you see that part?
Oh yeah, I saw it. Yeah.
I thought that was great. But yeah, I would have loved to see him be actually on the team. But yeah, he's the one guy that is. Of all the people that we kind of been looking at.
We can never have, like, our three or four guys that we really like all be good at the same time, right?
Right, exactly.
It's kind of like our kids, right? Like, you know, like, one of them will be bad one day, and then the next day they're great, and then the other kid's bad, you know? And so, but we can never have, like, all three or all four of our favorite wrestlers, like, get a push that we want.
Right. And that's fair. I mean, that's the kind of the trade you got to make in watching wrestling, I suppose. So, yeah, I mean, I don't even know what to say. I mean, the guy's super entertaining, even more so than Sandow for me.
But to me, he's become like a Ziggler, right? Like, Ziggler like a year and a half ago. Like, you know, I liked Ziggler, but I could never get behind him 100% because I always knew he was going to lose. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of like the same thing with those guys. Like, you know, it's kind of like they first come into the WWE, they get a belt right away. You know, same thing with our other boy that's part of the gospel revival and stuff, and now he's dancing.
Biggie.
Yeah, he's dancing.
He's
like
dancing and preaching.
He's dancing like an idiot, you know, over there. But then, yeah, the thing is, like, so it's like they get a ton of momentum, they get a ton of fan support, they win the belt. The second they win the belt, then they die, right? Like, and then all of a sudden, like, all the fan support is just gone, and then they can turn around and say, like, well, he couldn't carry the belt. He couldn't garner the fans' interest once he had the belt. It's like, yeah, because you buried the guy. And so it's like the same thing. It's like, it's kind of like they have the talent to sustain, but it's just kind of like then you're just waiting. It's like, I don't want to wait. You know, I've waited this long for Ziggler. I've waited this long for whoever, for Sandow. It's like, now I got to wait for these other two guys that I really like. I don't want to see survivors. I want to see guys that are ready to step in and go, because I think all these guys can go, and you want to talk about work. I think, you know, I think your boy is one of the best workers around, and he's still getting buried.
Which boy is that? Come on, Cesaro now, or are you still?
Yeah,
I have so many boys, so I'll make sure. Yeah, it's weird, and it's even worse with Cesaro, because the guy did get himself over, and they took away, like you said before, they took away everything he had, and every time they made him reinvent himself, he. A lot like Sandow, like he continued to get over despite what they wanted to do with the guy, and then finally they just have to strip him down to nothing, and that's the part that sucks. And every time I read anything, they always say they're really high on Cesaro, like Triple H and all the guys in management. So who knows, man? Who knows? I mean, there's so many ways you could go with that guy.
Well, there's no excuse for him, because the guy, he's great in the ring. He's good on the mic, and then you put him against these big guys. You put him against like Harper and Rowan or whoever it is. He's not that much smaller than these guys either. I mean, the guy has the look. Maybe the only thing is that he's bald. But I mean, hell, I mean, Macho Man and Hulk Hogan were bald, you know, and then they still back those guys.
Well, he's physically is smaller than those guys, but he power wise.
And I'm talking height wise too. Yeah. You know, he's not that small. I mean, I looked.
Well, how big do you think? He's like 240, right? 235.
I'm talking about his height, though. I'm not talking about like bulk, but
like he stands up.
Yeah,
to him,
right? I think he's just one of those guys that they can't fit in a box, you know, because he's tall, you know, he has a good build, but he's not a powerhouse steroid type build. I mean, I think if you put him in the ring with Ryback, he's taller than Ryback, and I think that's what I saw was like, I'm like, he's not physically overpowered by Ryback.
I bet you he's stronger than Ryback.
Probably. While you take a second to,
it's none of my business, though.
To drink your juice.
I was pulling my Kermit the Frog there. That's none of my business, though.
The ventriloquist. So there we are, dude. This is a lot more positive than I thought it was going to be.
Well, I mean, I thought that two-thirds of the time we've been away, wrestling's been pretty solid. Like, I agree. I, and I think that did contribute. Just it wasn't the Rollins or the Reigns injury as much as just it got bad. Like the stories weren't going anywhere. Like the shows were boring. The matches weren't good. And you know, I just think that the whole authority thing just totally played its course. And it's like I like the way McMahon did the authority. There's a time and place to have, like, that heel character running the show. But, like, Triple H just seemed like he overplayed the hand, right? It's like, he's boring on the mic. Steph's boring on the mic now. Like, where she used to be pretty interesting, now she's just kind of, like, gone on to become...
She has on Chris Jericho to kind of...
She's like the female Triple H now. She's been taking promo classes from Triple H, and it's just dull. It's dull what they're doing. But then, like, there's no logic, there's no rhyme or reason to the stuff that they're doing. Then they have a good team with, like, Evolution, and then when they kind of turned that into what the authority became, it was pretty good, and then they just start shuffling up the roster. Then what they start doing with Randy Orton doesn't make any sense. And then it's like, it sucks, because, like, Randy Orton, like, goes through these phases where it's like, he goes from, like, being, like, just stale as hell to, like, really interesting, and then as soon as he gets really interesting, oh, get him off the show.
Well, yes, he has to do a movie that no one's
I know, but
see.
Yeah, but like that was the thing. Like when they started that 3 weeks where he was, you weren't quite sure if he was still on the side with the authority. He was gold, man.
Well, and then here's the other thing too.
But then, I mean, that would have been the perfect place to like write him out of the show and bring him back on Team Cena and have him go full on. Face push, right? Like, I don't know. It's just like there's so many. Like, you never know what's going on with that guy.
Well, but at the same time, if any guy can take off and really start getting a kind of an underswell of support, I mean, you look at the Vines things that they do with the
yeah.
I mean, it's like he had a ton of that was like a ton of easy press for them to do.
Sure.
The guy's going off virally. Like, even people that don't know wrestling, they're watching him do all this stuff and they think it's great. It's like, well, you can't. I mean, you guys are so social media conscious. You can't use that.
Yeah.
You can't make this guy all of a sudden become. I mean, it's, you know, it's funny because I'm watching all these like old Monday Night War Raw, you know, Monday Night War stuff and everything like that, and they're talking about how. The NWO was mainstreaming, you know, and people were here and there. And I watched the Goldberg one where they're saying, like, well, you know, Goldberg really was kind of like a clone of Stone Cold Steve Austin. And they put him on TV because he was kind of like Stone Cold Steve Austin. Because anybody that would watch, you know, that doesn't watch wrestling, if they turn it on because they hear one thing about this because he broke the glass ceiling of mainstream media. And they flip through the channels like, oh, yeah, I'll watch Goldberg not knowing who he is. It's like, well... Randy Orton was doing that, and you're talking about, like, you know, you're looking at Twitter feeds of people that don't even know who this guy is, and they think it's great, like, he's on Facebook, he's doing all this stuff. It's like, well, you can't buy into that. It's like, you guys have lost it. You lost the pulse of what made you guys so great, why you beat WCW is because you capitalize on these things here and there. And it's the age-old thing that we always say is that without any competition, they don't need to do anything. But it's like, you're right. I mean, I think... You know, Triple H being in there and having a bigger say, I think it sometimes does hurt the company, and I think it's because he's set in his ways. He doesn't really change. I mean, and for him to kind of tote out Chris Jericho to show that, oh hey, you know, even though everybody knows that me and Chris Jericho had beef way back when, and this and this, is like, I'll give this guy airtime, you know, just for you guys to show that I'm like a kind of like a guy that will really knows what you guys want to see. And I'm not talking about what he says on air, but I'm saying, like, to everybody within the kind of the industry or whatever it is. But I really kind of see him, like, as a Kevin Nash, as a booker, you know, and I think it's like, you know, Nash always pointed to, like, well, Rey Mysterio Jr. beat me, you know, so there you go, you know, the small guy beat the giant, you know, and so that's why I'm legit, you know, it's kind of the same thing. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of do this whole kind of the flipping... anonymous GM again. It's like, come on, dude. You know, it's like, hopefully it's just a one-time thing and hopefully it's just for Cyber Monday, but it's just like, you kind of just, you know, it's like everything's good, and then all of a sudden it's like, great, now you're, not only are you bringing back that raw GM, but then I have to watch Cole, like, you know, talk about it and stuff and everything like that, and now he's a face doing it. It's like, there's some problems there. You know, there's problem, you know, Triple H is a problem, and then really the announced team is a problem too. I think JBL is doing the best that he can, but when you have Cole and the King together, it's time to break that ship up.
I'd say, and I agree with everything you said on that exactly. I like JBL. Cole's bad, but I think, as you said many times about John Cena, I think Cole is the necessary evil at this point. It's like, from everything I've ever read, they love the guy because even though he can't call a match for shit, like, he gets all the commercials and all the promos for the app and everything. Like they always kind of say there's just, like, a ton of information that they throw at him. And I'm not trying to make an excuse. I don't like the guy as a broadcaster. But
Cole's good in what he does. I mean, in terms of what he has to do.
Yeah, for what they're asking him to do, he does the job. But for what they're asking him to do, being an actually good wrestling announcer is probably about the 10th on the list of priorities. But here's the beef. King adds absolutely nothing. And if you're going to kind of reduce Cole, I can't believe I'm going to sit here on this fucking podcast and try to defend Michael Cole. But if you're going to have Cole do what he has to do, you better get somebody on the other side that's stronger. Like, I don't even care if it is like a babyface shill, right? Someone that is actually entertaining and good on the mic to go on the other side and let him and JBL kind of, like, do something and then get Cole, like, so Cole can do what they need him to do and then the whole broadcast doesn't have to suffer because...
Well, they try to make Cole the straight man. And then you have JBL being the heel guy, but then the King's not holding up his end of being the babyface guy, and that's really when it was Cole and JBL by themselves, I thought they worked pretty well. You really don't see that anymore because SmackDown's now a 3-man team as well, and the guy that does SmackDown, I mean, you don't know he's there, which is fine, because that's what he's supposed. You don't know he's there, and then you're listening to Cole and you're listening to JBL, and he's kind of like the Ernie Johnson of the group, where he can kind of poke here and there and poke there. But yeah, it's funny. It's like, I feel bad for teenage guys or kids listening to wrestling. It's like, look at the announcers we had. I mean, Gorilla wasn't the greatest guy in the world, but I mean that guy, he had so many sayings and stuff. It's just such old school stuff. It's like, Gorilla worked, and then of course he had Jesse. But then, and at the same time, then you had Bobby Heenan as well. But then also, you have one of the best. I think you have one of the best announcers of all time in JR. And JR wasn't always good, but over the course of time, you got used to him, and he was so distinct, and he knew exactly what he was going to say. Whereas like Cole's just like he's just a mark. You're like listening to a mark. He's a step ahead. He's a step above Shivani, but that's not saying that much.
Yeah. And even another announcer that, like, isn't going to go down as all-time legendary as an announcer, but McMahon did the job as an announcer, too. And there was, like, this whole depth of announcers where, when we were kids, like, whoever the third team on WCW Thunder was still...
Awful Alfred?
Yeah, was still a guy you could listen to.
Yeah.
Kevin Kelly, right? But, like, yeah, these guys, their first team is brutal.
Yeah. So... We're again close to the hour mark, and it hasn't been a round of just negativity. And I think that's like kind of the other thing too. Is like, I was looking, I was like, man, I'm like, first of all, like, we're being very, like, I'm being very negative, and at the same time, like, I'm dominating the show, which I don't want to do.
Talking about today?
No. I'm talking before. It's like, man, it's like I'm talking the whole time, and it's like you're just kind of, you're like, yes, you're like my Ed McMahon, And
yeah, it kind of gets that way too. Sometimes it's like, when the show gets really bad, it's like, I don't want to come over here and just bash wrestling, It's like, it's good to come hang out and stuff, but it's like, dude, there's not even anything you can say at the point where we stopped for about a month. It was so bad. It's like, anything we said, we're just going to come on here and kind of rehash all the stuff that was wrong.
Well, not only that, but I couldn't even watch the show. Yeah. I couldn't watch it. I didn't want to watch it. Yeah. It's like, so I'm like, I'm like... It'd be kind of like Shivani and Tanae, when they were teamed together. Like, what do you think, Tanae? And you say like, that's a super crossover
stinger,
La plancha screwdriver corkscrew. like, yeah, shut up, Tanae. So
stagger on out of here.
So let's go ahead and get into the Golden Stick, and I think after that we'll kind of do a little bit of foreshadowing right now and kind of talk about WWE Network and what you've kind of been watching with that.
Breakfast. You know, now there's a fragrance that puts it all on the line. Arrogance. Whether it's a forehand, a backhand, every shot's a winner because women never let them love it. Arrogance for men will make you the number one seed. One shot and you'll be in the royal box.
You never to love it. So, I like this because, well, first of all, it's the modeling is hilarious. But this is good. We got the model in the Hall of Kayfabe before, and now he gets a Golden State. So, Martel had a few shining moments on the microphone. All the promos related towards the arrogance, and then his turn on Chico Santana. Was that 5? Is that WrestleMania 5?
WrestleMania 5. No, was it 5 or 6? So 5 was Mega Powers exploded, right? Yeah. So it probably... No, I think it was like 3 or 4.
It wasn't 3.
It wasn't 3. It was 4.
It could have been... It could have been...
It was 4.
Was it 4?
Yeah. Because okay. The Brainbusters weren't in 5. Okay. And that's when they won the titles against Strikeforce. And then, of course, you had the Slickster talking about the refried beans and stuff or anything like that, too. But, no, I mean, that's like the... I mean, I'm always trying to find something that I remembered that we used to just, like, talk about all the time. Mm-hmm. And to this day, that's like another one that we always talk about, dude.
Yeah. Mr. Tito.
And the whole thing, the best thing about it was that... So, my oldest daughter was doing homework. And she's probably about the same age. It's funny, like... She's 10, and when I was 10, I was, like, totally, like, heard and seen a lot more things that she's seen. And she just started cracking up at the part where he's like, ha, 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 practice. Yeah. But she didn't get all the, like, sexual innuendos. And back then, I didn't get them either until I heard it again. I was like, wait a minute. Like, this is like a so I was like, not only was this a good promo back when I was 10, but now that I listen to it now, it's even better. It's even better. The number one seed.
It's aged better with time.
Well, now that I actually get what he was saying.
Right.
I was like, man, this guy's the man right here, dude.
Even the one when he's like, he's getting in the car, yeah, right?
Move over, baby. Yeah, baby, move over. So I don't think we need to say that much more about it.
I mean,
but
this is one where the word kind of speaks for itself. You don't have to explain it. It's just
you can just kick back
and relax,
right? Yeah. We could be, don't talk, just, yeah. So you wanna bring back the Hall of Kayfabe? Or is there anything you'd like? What have you been watching on the WWE Network?
I haven't been watching much. I pick and choose like the Monday Night War stuff that I want to see.
You saw the Jericho one, right?
Yeah, that was the last one I watched. Was the Jericho one?
You didn't see the Rock one?
Because I saw the Jericho one like a week late, and I saw that the Rock one was out. And so I was like, okay, I kind of mentally checked that I need to watch that one. I just never went back to it. But, you know, I got some time off this week, so that could be in the offing, as they say.
Well, I watch every one, and they missed a week where they didn't have one for a week, and I was like, dude, where is it? You know, but I watched that pretty religiously. You know,
cause it's good. I'm glad you're making use of my account.
And no, I'm not. No, no, no. I purchased my own.
Oh, did you?
No, no, no. No, no, I did. No, no, no. I really did. No, I didn't. No. We're not doing that.
You're like Sando over here.
Yeah. That kind of like Young MC right there. The brothers killing other brothers. And, you know, nobody really knows where we're going because that was an old music video way back when. We're all in the same gang. The West Coast All-Stars, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
They shouldn't know either.
It was bad. But it's kind of, you know, it's funny watching this stuff. And then WWE will say, like, kind of the same time all the time. They always show the ratings and stuff about, and then they always bring up April 13th when they beat them. But at the same time, they're like, oh, the WWE wasn't adapting to what fans wanted. And I find that kind of funny because it's like, well, you guys are kind of in the same role right now. Now, granted, what they were talking about when Raw first came on air and stuff and everything they were doing, stuff was pretty bad. I mean, the matches were bad. The characters were really bad. Mm-hmm. At least now it's kind of, it's compelling, but they're resting on their laurels a little bit and they're not pushing the envelope. And it's just kind of, with me, it's like, well, I don't know if you could have Stone Cold in this era. I don't know if you can have The Rock in this era. And the kind of the guys that really kind of had an underswell of fan support. I think they picked Daniel Bryan as kind of the guy to say, like, okay, this is the guy that will push, that everybody wants to see pushed, because he's not as confrontational. Everybody likes him. He appeals to all demographics. And then he gets hurt, so they really don't know what to do with it. But, I enjoy it. I started kind of watching some matches again. They don't have matches that I want to see, but they'll have, like, certain matches here and there. But it's been nice. It's been nice to kind of, you know, watch it. And, like, even, like, a guy like Brian Pillman, like, I like watching the kind of the Beyond the Ring with all the DVD documentaries and stuff. So watching, like, the Brian Pillman story and watching the Hart family story and stuff like that, it's been good, you know. And it's like kind of like a, it's, you know, it's like I'm even thinking of, like, you know, with the gift that you get as a coach, you know. So I'm the only coach there, so they don't have to split the money, so I get all the money. You know, it's like, well, I can probably get an iPad, and then, like, I can go to the gym and just, like, instead of, like, listening to music or something or watching something on TV that I don't want to watch, I can pretty much watch whatever I want to watch, and like that, my workout will be over. Because, like, if I want to watch a 20-minute match or watch, like, say, like, an old, like, pay-per-view, I can do that, and time will fly by, and I won't even know that I'm doing it. So it's been nice. It's been everything that I wanted it to be. I'm just worried that they're not getting the numbers that they want, and I just don't want them to tank the network because they're not getting the sponsorship board or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think they're pretty committed. But, I mean, that could be the other thing, too. I mean, if they can't find any external competition, maybe the internal competition of how do we keep people interested and make them want to pay for the network, because they want to sustain that, maybe that'll be the vehicle to get some of these younger guys going forward and getting some of the pushes they deserve. Well, if they had competition, who do you think would be the guys? What do you think they'd be doing if they had, if there was a WCW type entity out there right now?
Well, CM Punk would still be wrestling. I mean, and CM Punk wouldn't have pretty much had, like, the physical breakdown that he did. You know, because I really think, like, his body started giving out because mentally he was exhausted mentally. I don't think that, I mean, there's no way that you let a guy like CM Punk go. And it's kind of funny. It's funny with this guy because TNA offered him a great contract. You know, like, you're going to be our focus point. I mean, he really could have started another war, I think, because the second that he signs with TNA, I would have stopped. I probably would have stopped watching WWE just to watch, you know, CM Punk. But at the same time, it's like, you don't have, you know, there's a lot of things with CM Punk that made him CM Punk that I don't think he would have been able to do in TNA. I think one of them is, granted, is like his theme song. You know, like, his entrance really did it for me. Every time that entrance came out, that's what really did it for me. And then, of course, then you were able to watch him with his matches. But you put that guy on, the mic in TNA, and you know, and I don't even think he would talk bad about the WWE, but just the way this guy interacted with everybody, interacted with his opponents, or interacted with the crowd, he's must-see TV. And so that's one thing that he would still be wrestling right now if they had legitimate competition. But I think that's really it. I think that's really, like, my only kind of misgivings about WWE, because I think the guys that they're pushing are the guys that should be pushed.
You don't think if WCW or, like, something like around that level was existing, Ziggler would have got a much higher push already, and Cesaro would be getting up there at the top? You don't think maybe, like, they would have had to kill the whole Cena thing or completely reinvent him a few years back?
Cena probably would have been a heel. I mean, they probably would have asked him to be a heel. But I think that's not just because there's no WCW, but I think at the same time there's no really like established faces either. You know, there's no established faces, there's no established heels. This is all kind of new. Cena doesn't have to turn heel, and I don't think he ever will, because there's nobody on the other side that can really take away his limelight. And I think Daniel Bryan hits a certain niche, but I don't think he's strong enough to make, he's not, like, physically imposing enough, or even like, so on Monday when he had the mic, I thought it was really vanilla. You know, I mean, that yes can only take you so far. You know, that there's no guy that is really compelling on the mic right now in the company where Cena has to kind of step back and look, okay, what do I need to do? There's no competition for that, and I think a lot of that has to do because WWE doesn't allow to have competition, aka Ambrose and Wyatt doing their own thing. So
right, I mean, and that's what I'm saying. I mean, if you had another company, then they wouldn't have to stifle their own talent, right? like something like what you brought up earlier with the RKO vines. You know, if that had happened, they used to run with things that happened naturally like that. But now, even though they could see an opportunity, they're like, well, that doesn't fit what we're trying to do, so let's pretend that's not happening and stick to whatever lame storyline that we already had going. So I think if there was that competition, they would have to be forced to have talked about those RKO vines or forced to say, like they wouldn't be able to take Cesaro and do what they did to Cesaro with as over as he was getting with the crowd and say, okay, you guys stop doing all your moves now. Or even, not that I'm this big Ryder fan, right? But at the time when Ryder was getting hot as shit, they wouldn't be able to just tell him, hey, you know, you got to stop doing all that now. They would have had a run with it.
Yeah.
Just to see where can Ryder go.
And that's, I mean, and I think that, you know, that's the biggest problem I've had with this whole thing because I wanted to see what Ryder could do. Because, you know what, I was getting interested in Ryder. I thought, you know, he had some good moves in the ring. Like, not great moves, but, you know, his Rough Ryder, whatever the hell he called it, his finisher move. It was fun to watch. And he had certain spots that I really started to like. And then they just stripped the guy down. And it's like, and now he's a jobber. And you see him, like, every now and then, like, in a battle royal or something. So
he's the bunny.
Is he the bunny?
Most reports would indicate so.
Well, I hope he is the bunny. I mean, anything to kind of put a new guy in the spotlight, I'm down for it. But at the same time, it's like, dude, like he had like a, you know, his gimmick was going to last forever, right?
Right.
But you could already see that this guy like totally reinvented himself, and he was making a gimmick that worked. Well, once the gimmick stops working, let's see where he can reinvent himself again. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it's like it's not like we're sitting here going like, well, you know, you look at The Rock, right? You look at The Rock. Rock really, you know, bad as a babyface, takes off as a heel, like one of the best heels I've ever seen. Then he becomes one of the best babyfaces that I've ever seen. But then he got stale too. And to tell you the truth, they tried to turn him heel again. It wasn't working. There's a lull in wrestling. So it's not like all these, you know, I'm not looking at anything with rose-colored glasses and saying like, oh, you know, you never get another Rock. Because I look at it like, you know, The Rock, towards the end of his run, wasn't that good. But at the same time, when he came back after a long time, what happened? I started watching wrestling again, and then we started doing this podcast. It was all because of The Rock. So, you know, I mean, we can sit here and go like, well, how would it be different? I'd rather look at like how it could be, you know. When let's just leave it at that, and let's go back. I think what I really want to say about the WWE Network is that it satiates a fan like me. Where if it's not good, like even though I wasn't watching wrestling when we stopped doing the podcast, I was still watching WWE Network, mm-hmm. and I was remembering what I really liked about wrestling, and it slowly started getting me back into, you know, because I'm starting to go like, you know what, all you're watching, if you're a wrestling fan, all you're watching is the stories of these wrestlers. You know, you're not watching wrestling itself. Like, you got to watch wrestling to really kind of see if you still like it, what it is, or you just one of these guys that just live in the past and go like, oh, it's so much better. Mm-hmm. So that's what I like about the network, because not only do I like having all these libraries of everything that's going on and learning more about, you know, these different promotions and stuff. But at the same time, it's like, dude, I'm like, if you're a wrestling fan, you got to watch the product now, because the product now athletically is better than what it was before. Cause you watch some of these old matches, you're just like, God, this is terrible. Yeah. You know? So, you know, it's, that's what I've enjoyed about the network.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's good then, like when you are getting tired of like the product's bad and you're getting tired of watching it, like you can kind of go watch something and kind of remind yourself like why you like wrestling in the first place. Or you could kind of also go back and say, yeah, maybe it wasn't quite as good as I thought it was that one either.
Yeah. Well, but there are certain things. I mean, the good thing about the Attitude Era and stuff, and even WCW, is there's probably about 25 to 30 things that you remember that was really, really good. But at the same time, over the past 3 years we've been doing this, there's been great moments and that have been really good too. I want to ask you real fast, whatever happened, did we get the tickets for WrestleMania, or did that fall through? Did the wife slapped the shackles on you?
Yeah, but I'm there's a slight glimmer of hope. Like, so we can talk about that some other time.
Well,
there's a slight glimmer of hope, like okay. You said.
We'll leave it at that. Because okay. I'm cleared. I was like, it was going to be $250, and yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. You know, no problem whatsoever. Because I think it's like almost like, I'm thinking, I'm like, dude, I'm like, WrestleMania is going to be in Santa Clara. Like, I remember all these WrestleManias, Trump Tower and
yeah.
and Madison Square Garden. It's like, dude, I'm like, this is like a once in a lifetime thing, you know. Even though I'm not probably seeing people that I want to see, it's like it's still WrestleMania. So,
exactly.
I'm gonna put this. I've been thinking about these guys, and especially with the kind of the things I've been watching on the WWE Network the past couple weeks. I'm gonna put these guys into the Hall of Kayfabe. And you're going to be like 100% like for it. You're going to love it. Dude. You're going to never to love it. So the guys I'm going to put
in. Young
Stallions? No, not Young Stallions. The guys I'm going to put in is it's a tag team. And they're known by the SST, Samoan SWAT team. Do you remember who was in the Samoan SWAT team? And this is what makes them so great because it's like you have to think about
it. Well, because I'm always trying to. I have a hard time differentiating Samoan SWAT team from Wild Samoans, but I'm pretty sure it's Samu and Fatu.
Very good. Look at that, dude. Very good. But so these guys, these were your guys, but I just remember that name, SST, and I just thought it was like one of the tightest team names ever. And then watching these guys in WCW was something else. And they kind of had a typical Samoan run where they come in and they're unstoppable, and then they're really there to build up the other tag team. And then the second that they build the tag team, the person that you want to build up, then they start becoming jobbers. But, they gave us like a slight glimmer of hope in terms of, wow, this team is really good. It's like a team that can go up against the Road Warriors, a team that can go up against Doom. And, you want to talk about the work that Samoans do in the ring. And, these guys were it. I mean, Fatu was. I mean, this was a small Fatu,
yeah.
And it was. And, you know, and everybody forgets about Samu too. But this team, for probably about at least one summer in our lives, was the best thing going.
Yeah, yeah. So that's kind of what I remember because I haven't went and watched any of their stuff on the network. But sometimes like ESPN used to play the old AWA stuff. So I remember I'd watch some and I'd see a lot of Samoan SWAT team. I'm not sure if that's what the name they were going by, but it was Fatu and Samu. And so yeah, you got Rikishi Fatu, about 200 pounds smaller than like what he was known for towards the end of it, towards his attitude or weight, like really athletic, like not I'm biased, but not on the level of Haku or anything, not on the level of Ming, but like he could move and he was pretty good and entertaining. And the thing that I kind of liked was, that was a time where I just kind of was happy that WCW was giving those guys a run. Because I knew, and that was a time when I still wasn't watching WCW yet. But I knew that team would never get over in WWE. They would just never let them. But I was glad that WCW, like, at least with the tag team divisions, they give it to, minority teams or, Samoans and let them actually have some kind of run. And so that was kind of like, I felt like in certain ways they were breaking the glass ceiling in certain ways, right? But, yeah, they were a really good team and one of the early teams that you have a couple of big guys that both could get all the power moves through but also could kind of go off the top ropes and do all that stuff.
Well, even we didn't know it back then, but we look back at it now, and we knew what their role was to be, because we especially saw it with, Umaga, right? Because, Umaga, when he first came onto the scene, was just, they made him, same thing with Yokozuna, too, right? It's like you always have these big guys that are unbeatable, mm-hmm. and they're there to build up the top baby faces, that and this, but it was a nice ride when it happened, and a couple things about this team was that I think I've seen maybe only about 2-3 matches of them, but when you watch them perform, it's a match that it's a performance that you've seen before, and it's a performance that you've seen that you know you've seen it without actually seeing it. It's like I've seen this before. I've seen this type of high end impact match, and you just seen these guys, their athleticism. And you don't expect it from these really kind of, because at the time they were big. They were big in terms of wrestling standards. But, they're one of those teams that you look at and go like, okay, this is what wrestling is. I mean, this is wrestling, and it's a specific style of wrestling. And I think that's really what kind of me starting liking the Usos, because everything about the Usos I didn't like. I didn't like them coming out doing the chant. I thought it was kind of, for me, like, being a minority and stuff and everything. It's like, why do they have to kind of go back to an old style chant? And then it started growing on me, you know, because all of a sudden, because they were able to perform in the ring. And there's certain things I don't like about the Usos right now. Like, and it's not, has nothing to do with them. It's more Cole saying Uso crazy. I think that's stupid. But the performance level, I mean, what the Usos are doing now, that's what was being done in the 80s. And when the Usos were doing it, we have seen this before with the Samoan SWAT team. And with the Samoan SWAT team, we know we've seen it before, but it's kind of like a leap of faith. It's like, yeah, like, you know, you talk about the Wild Samoans, the original ones, Afunseka. And I think I've seen, like, them towards the tail end of their career, but they're just, I was like, man, these guys are great. And even though I knew they were going to lose, it's like, these guys are really good. So it was nice to, like, it was nice to see a team like that just really get a good build. And at the time, since we were marks at the time, we didn't know what was going on. But while that ride was going on, it's like, it's good to have these guys win, and at the same time, they're Samoan, and not a lot of people know who Samoans are or what, you know, anything that's island, you know, that's island-based, where me and you have a natural affinity for, because we heard how, like, badass Samoans were from, like, all our family telling us, like, when they lived on the islands and stuff, how you didn't mess with Samoans, and you actually find, you know, it was nice to have some reaffirmation there, because we were never a part of that. We didn't grow around it, but it was just the whole thing in together, and then to have, like, SST, it just sounded good, and it's like, man, that's pretty badass.
Still one of the stables I gotta make every time I get a game, right? And the group changes, but, like, yeah, the SST is kind of it's kind of iconic, name in wrestling, I think. Like, better than Wild Samoans, like, in terms of name. It just fits perfectly.
Yeah, and at the time, I think SWAT, like, I think there were, even, like, in popular culture, like, I think there were some SWAT movies that were coming out, like, kind of, like, anything from, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger or Chuck Norris, sort of like that. So it was the right place, right time, but, I don't think Samoans really get their due. I don't even know if I'm saying this right, but the
Inouye family.
Yeah, I don't think they get their due. You know, that's a DVD in the making right there. And if you look at that, like, family line, and all the guys that were in it, it's just, you know, yeah. It's just nice that we're finally kind of saying, yeah, we put your boy Haku in there and Ming in there, and I was kind of like, well, maybe we should put Fatu in there or whatever. That I was like, nah, like, Fatu was good, but the Samoan SWAT team was it. And for a while, that was, like, one of my favorite tag teams. Even though, it's funny, it's like, even though I've only seen three or four matches, it's just like, you hear the name Samoan SWAT team, you see one match with them, it's like, oh, that's my favorite tag team.
Yeah. Yeah, they're good. And then it's good, like, haven't seen them, and now we get to see the Usos, like, it's weird. It's like, there's the new, like, as time has gone on, the actual Samoan wrestlers have gotten smaller and smaller, it seems. But they still have that real good just tag team psychology and a little bit more athletic than their previous generation, but, like, the same amount of teamwork. And then even if they're smaller, it's like, you know, they're still nearly as strong, right? So just kind of like the right team, I think, at the right time. And I think at a time where there isn't that many good tag teams out there, right? To be able to just kind of, like, carry on a tradition that their families had and be, like, probably the best tag team that there is. It's good.
Well, I think if you look at tag team wrestling, right, like, there's been certain stages of tag team wrestling. I think what WCW was doing, NWA was doing, was that they would have, like, just straight pure tag teams, like pure, like, technical tag teams and everything like that. And then, of course, then you'd have your power tag teams, Road Warriors, Powers of Pain, down the line, all these huge, big guy power teams. But the one tag team that's always been through every iteration of wrestling has been a Samoan tag team, from Wild Samoans to Afunseka in the 70s. 80s, you had the Wild Samoans with Ming and the Tonga Kid. So you had, there's always that staple of wrestling. And I don't think people really, I don't think, you can put on an Afunseka match right now, and they're great in the ring. I mean, just, and it's funny because it's not like they're better. It's just, it's a different style. Like, I would love to see, like, Afunseka versus Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, or Arn Anderson, Ole Anderson, because it's two totally different styles, two great styles of tag team wrestling. But the Samoan tag team wrestling, I think, is some of the best high spot, some of the best well-choreographed tag team wrestling there is. And what's even better is then you know, then I can point, well, like, hey, like, Road Warriors, they were a good tag team for a while, but, you know, the power only goes so far. But then you take, like, guys like, you can take Ole and Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, who I think is, those two guys are one of my favorite tag teams ever. Guys like the British Bulldogs. And so you have, like, the Canadian-style type tag team wrestling. So there's different pockets, and that's what made tag team wrestling so good. And I think that's kind of what makes WWE really good right now, is because you have a Samoan tag team wrestling. You have an old school tag team wrestling in Cody Rhodes and Dustin Rhodes, mm-hmm. and then there's the Matadors is kind of like your typical kind of they're not lucha, but it's more like kind of like a Puerto Rican style type wrestling. So it's good. I mean, and I don't think you can have a kayfabe and just have, like, maybe two guys in the kayfabe. I mean, we can put Afu and Sika in there. We can put every iteration of any Samoan tag team, and they fit perfect. But for me, the quintessential or my first love of Samoan wrestling was the SSD.
And I think that the thing, and kind of maybe ended on this thought here with the Samoan teams, I think, just to sum it up, is I think what makes that like, style of team stand the test of time is all these Samoan teams have, like, these guys that are no doubt powerhouses, but just as athletic as anybody. So it allows them to go in and fight the power fight against the Road Warriors. But then if you want to turn around and put them in a match against, like, the Rockers, they can work that style too and not look clumsy or anything.
Rockers!
Right? And that means that I think that it's that versatility they have to be able to do that power style, and then turn around the next night and go against some high flyers and make it look seamless,
yeah,
and not clumsy.
Yeah, I mean, long overdue. So, geez, Minuscule 86. I mean, we're getting close to, like, Minuscule 100 if we would have kept it up. That wasn't the first time I've heard that phrase. But do we do the Moody's pretty soon? Or?
Yeah, that's, we got to.
All right, let's go right now. so that's
coming. Rest of the year.
Yeah, that's coming down the pipe. That's going to be tough to do rest of the year, but that's coming down.
I got some ideas too.
So are you back in this? You ready?
Yeah.
You feeling it again?
Yeah, I'm thinking going forward, probably going to have to switch it to Wednesdays, because I think the basketball game is going to be Tuesday, Thursdays. But if we can do Wednesdays once school starts up,
and after I get off work and all that good stuff.
Yeah. Well, then in a couple of weeks, then I'll be on Christmas break again anyway. So
yeah,
then we can just do it whenever.
All right. straight balling on the. Do I get a play during the?
You want to play
Christmas? Yeah, I got to get some new shoes, but yeah, I can play
because I got a kid that's 6'4" now, so I'm gonna need someone to beat him down.
You mean beat him down? Okay, hopefully he can beat me. If he beats me down at the end that I start playing, you know, after those couple weeks, then I've done my job. All
right.
So we got my boy over here. We didn't even introduce. Allow me to reintroduce myself and get that hand out of my mother's face. So I got my boy. Better have my donuts over here. I am the one Bad News Ramen, not one Bad News Ramen, but I am Bad News Ramen. We're looking at Minuscule number 86. Glad to be back. I haven't seen you
it's been a while.
About 4 months, man. It's like I was living in Colorado playing cards with my brother's kids or something. So we'll check you out hopefully next week, if that's so the case, and we're good to go, right?
That's it.
All right.
I'd like to start off by thanking our sponsor for financing the parts for this Frankenstein monster, along with my partner, who's a bro of few words. We did this research with two nerds and two birds. Piano, do a show, same time, watch it. And guaranteed to give a more than just hot spit. MC extraordinaire, technique sorta rare. Quarter clear, sorta scared. Next week, more to share. From the most retarded as artists this year and forever. Villain them, you mean big brothers love ya. Definitely felonies telling me. Treacherously MC yelling, be set him free. Let me see, that strategy's misleading. G's all in the freezer with the batteries and Z-rims. Hear him stalk the concrete with bunion. And won't hurt corns when it's on like the stun gun. Not so shocking. Funyun face rappers eat rocks over beatboxing. Debunk punks with a stock flow and make it funky fresh with no socks. Oaxaco, mad villain dinners high as Kathmandu. Tilted to the side like that fat man's shoe. Look, not to give a mixed signal. The rap game got more toys than Kris Kringle. And he's fake. The airs is not deceiving. I can't believe my eyeballs no more than Steven.